Don't miss out on the latest news and events in your community. Visit starlocalmedia.com today. Sign up for our newsletter and stay informed on all the latest stories affecting your neighborhood. And if you're a local business owner, let us help you reach your target audience with our effective advertising solutions. Visit starlocalmedia.com and take the first step towards staying connected to your community.
Hey there, folks. This is Matt Welch. I'm the sports editor here at Star Local Media, and welcome to another edition of the Star Local Media Gridiron Podcast. Round one of the Texas High School Football Playoffs is in the book. We are here to recap some of the some of the notable takeaways from the first round of playoff action this past weekend. I'm being joined by Tim Glaze. Tim does sports for Plano, Allen, and Lake Cities, as well as Brian Murphy, who is the sports editor for our Frisco, Little Elm, and Salina paper. As far as just kind of exploring just some of the notable subplots to emerge from this first round, as far as the teams that we cover, I think the first thing is how about the revenge of District 14-5A this week? That's probably the easiest way to.
I'm still salty about that.
That might be the easiest way to put it. This is a District 14-5A in its bi-district playoff matchups against 13-5A. Last year, it was the 13-5A, the All-Frisco District, that got the better of 14-5A in a very decisive 3-1 last year. And this year, 14-5A returning the favor. They won three of the four games against the Frisco schools last week. Wins for Prosper, for McKinney North, and wins for Lake Dallas. Frisco Lone Star, the only Frisco team still clicking along from that district. But yes, Brian and Tim, you guys were at several of these games. Tim, you had one of the best games in the first round overall, with just an absolute thriller between Lake Dallas and Reedy, a game won by the Falcons 37-34. You were out there at the Star getting a look at that one, just to see Lake Dallas be able to pull that out after some early adversity. Just what were your takeaways from that game?
So Brian and I talked a lot about it Friday night last week. I still think if those two teams played 10 times, I think Reedy could win like 6 or 7 of them. Okay. And I still feel like even just by saying that, I'm undercutting Lake Dallas and not giving them their due, because we have to say right now that Lake Dallas is just a good team. Didn't really know what to expect from them throughout the season. They had that really wonky loss to McKinney North that they should have won, mm-hmm. but then they turn around and they beat the Colony and Little Elm, but then they get blown out by Prosper at the end. So no one really had a feel about how the Falcons were going to do in the playoffs. When I saw that they drew Reedy, I thought that they were going to lose, and I thought they were going to lose big. And then Reedy goes out in the game and they go up 14-0, and I'm thinking, all right, this is pretty much going the way we thought. And then Reedy turns it over a couple times, which, Brian, you can chime in on this. Josh Foskey, their quarterback, two interceptions in that game and a fumble. You said he hardly ever turned the ball over this year.
He went almost the entire season without throwing an interception, without turning the ball over at all. And Reedy won the turnover battle, I'm pretty sure, in every single game. I'm not sure about the Lone Star game, when they lost, their only loss prior to the playoffs. But they just don't turn the ball over. That's what they do. And then Foskey throws two picks, fumbles the ball, and you said it was just a weird play.
Yeah, he was running up the middle on a scramble, and he was about to get tackled for sure, but he just dropped the ball. It just fell out of his arms, and Zaylin Long fell on it for Lake Dallas, and that was that. Lake Dallas turned the ball over a couple times themselves, but they did end up winning the turnover battle plus one. And some weird plays by Reedy in the red zone in this game, too. I think I told you, again, they had a 4th and 5 from the Lake Dallas 10-yard line, and they went for it. They did that play that you said they did all year with Will Harbor.
They use Will Harbor. He's their sophomore linebacker. Mm-hmm. He's also their kicker, mm-hmm. and he's also their wildcat goal line quarterback / running back. Mm-hmm. And every time it's, they need a handful of yards or less, they just give it to Harbor and they power it up and power through the middle, and they usually get it. Mm-hmm. They really didn't have any problems with it all year, and I guess Lake Dallas just, they're ready for it. It's one of those things where if it wasn't a playoff game, I don't think Lake Dallas would have been as prepared. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not as prepared, but as geared up. Mm-hmm. Or it was one of those deals where Lake Dallas has just been there, done that, mm-hmm. had more experience. Reedy only in their second year program, first ever playoff game. Foskey, junior quarterback. I'm not saying they weren't prepared, but Lake Dallas was just even.
Yeah, that does matter, because even though Lake Dallas, you know, we think back, this is a Lake Dallas team that just 2 years ago, I mean, they went to the, you know, to the state semifinals.
State semis, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
then,
and although, granted, I mean, it's obviously a different team, you know, they've got, I mean, I'm not even sure how many, if any, players from that 2015 team are still on.
The same coach.
But yeah, it's, it's still the same coaching staff, and it's a coaching staff that is familiar with...
Young, you know, expects the, to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, with the preparation and the rigors required to, you know, to game plan for opponents at this level. And yeah, I mean, it's this was all just completely brand new for Frisco Reddy.
Yeah, but it was so odd because Lake Dallas just got destroyed in the final week of the year against Prosper. Mm-hmm. And I kind of looked at Reedy and Prosper as fairly similar dominant style teams. Reedy, you know, only lost one game all year. So I was like, you know, I won't be surprised if Reedy has a similar performance against Lake Dallas.
Yeah.
And they went up 14-0 early. And I just the turnovers, man. And I see they weren't able to run the ball. They like to run the ball with Justin Gibson.
He had a couple of touchdowns, but they were in the red zone.
Yeah, I see. He had 14 carries for 37 yards. Their successful games, for which pretty much almost every game was successful for them, minus the Lone Star game where they had similar outputs from their running game. They couldn't really run the ball because they were down, or they were pressing too much, so they were trying to use Foskey. Mm-hmm. And I see that in the Lake Dallas box score. They couldn't run the ball.
Yeah, they
barely had 100 yards rushing.
Yeah, they
over 30 attempts.
That's the other thing was, it didn't seem like they ran the ball that much. Probably just because Lake Dallas stuffed it so much. Yeah. We got to talk about Ryan Depperschmidt though. For as surprising as you want to say that this game was, because I was surprised. Depperschmidt was just a dog for Lake Dallas. Four rushing touchdowns. Another one throwing. He missed another one. He could have had two throwing touchdowns. He had a wide open Brandon Engel in the end zone, and it was just a little high, went over his head. But on his touchdown runs, I mean, he was running over people, and that's what was surprising for me, because I know he's a tough guy. But Reedy has some really good linebackers, and I mean, he was making them miss. He was running over them. He played his butt off.
So if Depperschmidt doesn't play like that, Lake Dallas doesn't win that game.
Again, I mean, almost just by saying that, I feel like I'm shorting Lake Dallas, but he had to play like that because they couldn't really hand it off to Kylie Smith because he was nursing a shoulder injury. Charles Williams was injured. He became kind of their main running back. So, yeah, I mean...
So there's a bunch of designed runs. I see Depperschmidt ran the ball 21 times.
Oh, yeah. They were... doing fakes out of the backfield, but it was just, I mean, it was him. It was a lot of get Depperschmidt out in the open, let him run over people, and he did. He played great. I was really impressed just by all facets of the game for Lake Dallas. Yeah. I don't, again, if those two teams played 10 times, I think it could go 6-4 Reedy, maybe even 7-3, because Reedy is a really good team.
Yeah. They just weren't, once they turned the ball over, it seems like they just weren't ready to respond. They were never been there before, mm-hmm. you know, in that situation. So,
and Coach Young said something interesting to me after the game. He knew, and I said this to you on Friday, he knew that Reedy just didn't trail much during the season.
Never.
Besides the game against Lone Star where they got blown out. Of course, Lone Star blows out everyone. But Reedy just wasn't used to playing from behind at any point. And so Young told me after the game, he said, you know, if we can get a lead at any point, or even make it close where they're a little uncomfortable, you know, they might be in uncharted waters for them. And as you can see, they had to go away from the running game, and they just didn't really know what to do once Lake Dallas came back from down 14-0 and took the lead.
Yeah.
A thrilling game. Reedy had a chance, actually. They actually stopped Lake Dallas with about 2 minutes left. They had a couple of timeouts. And they got the ball back, and they could have gone down and tied or won the game. But Lake Dallas got a sack, and then Foskey threw his second pick of the game to Jalen Harris, which ended it. So Reedy's done. Lake Dallas advances. They're going to be at AT&T Stadium this weekend against North Forney. Should be a game with a lot of points. I feel pretty fortunate to have watched that game. It was a lot of fun.
It was the only game between 13-5A and 14-5A in the bi-district round that was
entertaining,
to say the least.
Yeah.
The other three matches,
just competitive and just
any sort of competitive. I was at two of the other matches.
Yes, let's dig into that. I mean, yeah, you got to see we talked about, you know, what Prosper did to Lake Dallas and just kind of how that might have set a bit of a, you know, you weren't sure what to make of Lake Dallas heading into that first round, but I mean, perhaps that just speaks more just to the quality of Prosper and the run that they're on right now. Brian,
I think
you saw
Prosper's
that game.
Just really good.
Yeah, they're playing their best football right now. They're really good. They're really balanced. They do things well on defense. They run the ball down your throat. You can't stop it. Mm. Their quarterback is Keegan Shoemaker, has kind of come into his own after struggling at the beginning of the year, and he's really playing well, complementing that dominating run game. And they did to Wakeland in their first round playoff game kind of what they did to Lake Dallas. Mm-hmm. They beat him pretty good, 38-14. Granted, that game was tied 14-14 in the second quarter, and I was like, this is going to be a nice little tasty playoff showdown. And then Prosper just turned on the Jets. They scored. They got the ball back. They got an interception inside the 5-yard line with a little over 2 minutes left in the first half. And, you know, they ran the ball a couple times, and I was like, okay, maybe they're just going to try and run out the clock, you know, just going to half, mm-hmm. big play, you know, get a little momentum. No, they went down there and they scored with literally five seconds left on the clock. They drove down, and then Shoemaker made a fantastic throw. They took the lead going into halftime, and then they outscored Wakeland 17-0 in the second half. Wakeland just had no answer for Prosper, and Prosper just looks really, really good right now.
The emergence of Shoemaker, of them having a legit quarterback,
turned them around. That's what they're missing.
Because you and I have talked about Prosper a lot this year, and last year, you know, they had quarterback issues, and they got destroyed by Wakeland.
They had quarterback injuries. They were down to their third string quarterback, who wasn't even a quarterback.
Right.
He was one of their slot receivers / running backs.
But that was kind of one of their questions going into this year, was they're solid everywhere, but what are they going to get from their quarterback position? Yeah. If Shoemaker keeps playing like this, they have legit state championship aspirations, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. And last year they had a deep threat in Everett Jefferson, who went on to play at Texas State, but they had a guy, Justine Clark, really long, 6'3" receiver. He had a couple touchdowns in the game against Wakeland. He's kind of emerged as that big go-to receiver. Mm-hmm. They also have DJ Love, who I know you saw play against Lake Dallas. He's their slot guy. Mm-hmm. Shifty, you know, throw a screen, throw him out in the flat. You know, nothing else works, just dump it off to him, and he'll get you 15 yards. Mm-hmm. That offense is looking really, really scary at the right time.
He was also, I'm talking about DJ Love, he was also a real thorn for Lake Dallas. He didn't have a ton of yards in that game because I was at the Lake Dallas Prosper game. But something that Prosper did, which I'm sure they're going to keep using in the playoffs, is Caleb Adams, their star running back, is just right up the middle, down your throat. And then they would kind of run some play action off of that, and they would hit DJ Love on like a reverse or like a swing around the back, and just the defense is just totally unprepared for that.
And it seems like they're doing the same thing every time, but they're switching it up, because as a defense, you don't know, is Caleb Adams about to get 9 yards up the middle, or is DJ Love about to, you know, on this buck sweep, take it
exactly
9 yards down the sideline. They just alternate it, and then now the Shoemaker can kind of throw it downfield a little bit.
Yeah.
It's scary. Now, Adams had I don't have the stats in front of me, but he had almost 200 yards rushing against Wakeland. And it was a quiet 200 yards. He had a touchdown run, and he just did what he's been doing every game all year. So, Prosper looks good right now. Mm-hmm. And they'll be playing at Eagle Stadium in Allen Friday at 7:30 against Mesquite Poteet. So that should be a juicy matchup. Poteet took down Lone Star last year in the second round. I remember talking to Devin Hassan, our Mesquite sports editor. I was like, yeah, man, Lone Star, they're just going to steamroll. And he kind of agreed with me. We thought Lone Star was going to win by, you know, 4 or 5 touchdowns. And Poteet goes and beats them 45-3 or whatever it was, something crazy. So who knows? Poteet, you know, could...
They're kind of like Dallas. They have a lot of playoff experience, Poteet. Yeah. And even though they were kind of up and down during district this year, they're a whole nother animal playoffs, in the playoffs. For sure.
So then, I guess the other, you know, I guess, you know, Prosper, you know, taking care of Wakeland, not necessarily the most surprising result. I do think, if we're just going to round this out in the discussion of 14-5A versus 13-5A, Brian, the game that you were at on Friday, a game between McKinney North and Frisco Centennial, a game that, you know, these two saw each other back in week 3, a game that was really competitive. Frisco Centennial lost the game, but only, you know, 34-28, I believe the score was, and they had a chance to conceivably win that game had it not been for a late turnover. So you're thinking, you know, I'm sure your expectations heading into Friday were far different from what the game actually turned into. A game that, I mean, yeah, a fairly surprising and convincing win for McKinney North just shows how much can change in 2.5 months' time.
McKinney North has gotten better since that time, and Centennial will try and say they've improved as well, but Centennial didn't have Hunter Williams for that game. He tore his ACL the final game of the year against Heritage. So he was in crutches the entire night. I don't think he would have made much of a difference because North scored 56 points. They beat Centennial 56-14. But that's still some big plays.
He is
offense.
No, but he is like the, like I saw that kid against Lake Dallas. I mean, he is the engine that makes that offense go.
So granted, maybe they have a shootout and you know, it's a 50 to 50 something game or 50-40 whatever.
And that game was tied at halftime, your game, right?
The Centennial game?
Yeah.
No.
Wasn't that
was Wakeland Prosper.
Wakeland and Prosper were tied?
No, Wakeland and Prosper was tied just before the half. Prosper scored the last second.
So Centennial was never
competitive in this. No. North went up 14-0 just like that. Cam Constantine, Lamar Lucas, run it down your throat. It was just too easy. You know, Lucas did what he did against Little Elm the week before, just 40-yard run here. Cam Constantine, 40-yard run here. Oh, Cam, they lull you to sleep with a run. Let's launch a 40-yard touchdown here, and it was 14-0 before you even knew it. And Centennial just couldn't move the ball. You know, without Hunter Williams, they couldn't move the ball at all. They struggled. Brock Floyd threw three picks, you know, because he was trying to make things happen. And Centennial was never in this game. Coach Matt Webb, Centennial head coach, told me after the game, they beat us. They dominated us from start to finish. That's all there was to it. You know, Centennial was just never in the game at any point.
As far as North, I mean, was there anything that just, like, from week 3 to week 12 that just noticeably stuck out? Like, wow, I couldn't believe how improved they are.
Lamar Lucas is healthy, from what it seems. He was kind of banged up all year. He missed a few
games. They've been monitoring his playing time all year just
and
for the sake of health.
He seems fully healthy. He looks good. He looked good against Little Elm, you know, in the final week of the year. And North actually had 3 100-yard rushers in the game. Their backup, Emmanuel Moore, he also rushed for 100 yards also. And Cam Constantine looks good. I know earlier in the year they were splitting time to Constantine and their sophomore quarterback, which I'm not sure why they would do that. I'm sure the sophomore can play, but Cam Constantine is a special talent. And he's playing his best football of the year right now, too. So the heavy dose of those two guys is lethal for North right now.
I think Fetchy thought that the sophomore was a better thrower.
He might be, but Constantine's just a better playmaker.
Constantine overall, though, you got to ride with that guy.
He's the guy.
And yeah, and it's definitely health with Lamar Lucas, because how many times have we seen McKinney North this year where even though Lucas would get like 10 carries a game, he'd still get like 115 yards?
Against Centennial, he had 13 carries for like 120-something yards.
Same against Lake Dallas. I think he had 10 carries for 120.
Yeah.
So if he's getting 20-plus carries a game now, that they're going to score a lot of points.
Yeah.
So yeah, McKinney North, they're gonna score a lot of points whoever they play.
They face a tough test.
Yeah.
In Highland Park.
Highland Park was they were given a game by Texarkana Texas High. That was not as not the I'm not sure if it was deemed a cakewalk in the first place, but Highland Park certainly didn't make it seem that way.
I mean, that was 56-49.
It was a very competitive game.
Yeah. Which, and I think we can expect another high scoring game between those two.
Oh, for sure.
North and Highland Park this week.
Yeah, so. In the meantime, you know, shout out to District 14-5A. Last year, I believe it was only the Colony that got out of the first round
the
from
Colony
that district.
Frisco,
yeah, and everybody else in 13-5A took care of business. So, yeah, 14-5A returning the favor this time around. As far as the you know, the playoff action in 6A, I mean, at least within the schools that we covered, not a whole lot of just really competitive, entertaining football for this first round. You know, what was voted on as Start Local Media's game of the week, Allen versus Hebron. It was a competitive game in the first half, and then Allen just shifted gears in a huge way, wound up winning that game 48-17. You know, Capel made short work of Rowlett 37-6. Mesquite Horn did the thing against Conroe Oak Ridge 45-24. And Saxey had a little bit of a tougher time than expected with Lake Highlands. That was a 7-point game in the third quarter, but Saxey's able to pull away late, winning 49-28. You know, we will get to those schools a little bit later on once we start taking a look at the second round. My game on Friday, I was out at Bedford covering Plano Senior and Euless Trinity in what was, much like Lake Dallas and Reedy, one of the better first round games in the area. A game that Trinity wins in overtime, 28-21. I mean, I went about, you know, 15-20 minutes for the Rapid Reaction podcast just talking about just the ins and outs of what transpired in that game. So I'll try not to, you know, to rehash anything that was already out there. I guess just some last, you know, some, you know, we've, you know, had about had a few days to let this one sink in. Some takeaways from that one that just really stuck out, just the way that Plano was able to materialize its comeback. I mean, Plano was down 21 to 7, you know, midway through the fourth quarter. And when you think of Plano Senior, and I mean, this is a team that runs the ball, you know, 75% of the time. It's a team that hasn't, I mean, they've been very, you know, their quarterback, you know, only, you know, typically will only throw the ball, you know, 10, 12 times a game. So you're just thinking, you know, you know, you have 6 minutes to go to overcome a two-score deficit against a team that is, like, built to control the ball. I mean, it just seemed like Plano was kind of dead to rights there. Mm-hmm. But just the way that Plano was able to, you know, to work its two-minute offense and really flex its passing game. I mean, like I said, I mentioned, you know, their quarterback, Jonathan Taylor, he'll throw the ball, you know, just, you know, 10, 12, 13 times a game. He threw the ball 14 times in the last 6 minutes of that game. Completed 11 of those passes. I mean, it was just really weird just seeing Plano having to completely shift gears from an identity standpoint.
And it worked,
yeah. They they passed the ball on 14 of their final 16 plays in the fourth quarter. And I mean, yeah, they just, you know, granted it might have been a fairly, you know, soft zone defense that Trinity was playing, but Plano was able to march down the field on them in a way that, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, if you're just looking at what Plano had shown leading into that game, that you'd think they would be capable of. But yeah, sure enough, and one of the big reasons why was a wrinkle that they've shown intermittently throughout the year, but it was the use of Kyron Cumbie as a slot receiver.
Okay.
Cumbie, who is their star running back, you know, maybe the home run threat among DFW running backs at the 6A level, as far as just, I mean, he averaged, you know, double digit yards per carry for the majority of the season. Mm-hmm. But yes, he's also got they would expand his role a little bit more this year, and they used him as a slot receiver. I mean, they did this a lot earlier in the season. Kind of went away from, didn't see it as much, you know, during district play. But you know, and he was really effective in this capacity. I mean, he overall caught 8 passes for 97 yards. I mean, the majority of those came as a slot receiver. And it's one of those things, like, you know, people have kind of a mixed bag of thoughts on 7-on-7 and just what, you know, how productive 7-on-7 is as far as trying to kind of gauge what to make from it. Like, if, you know, if a team goes on a deep run in the state tournament, what does that mean for the, you know, for the regular season? Mm-hmm. 11-on-11. I mean, some coaches want nothing to do with 7-on-7. Some coaches live and die by it, mm-hmm. as far as an off-season activity. I do think 7-on-7 can be useful, though, in, you know, something like with Kyron Cumbie, watching him, you know, over the summer in 7-on-7, where he's, you know, exclusively playing as a receiver, you see things like wow, this kid can run routes well, he can get open well, he's got great hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just from watching him as a running back, that he's absolutely lethal in space. But I mean, there's parts of his skill set that, you know, 7-on-7 revealed that, like, wow, okay, I didn't realize he was this good in those areas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not sure if that's what, you know, made Plano think, like, hey, wow, maybe we could do something with this. Because I mean, he was really effective as a slot receiver. And, you know, as he now heads into his senior year, he'll once again be kind of the backbone of that offense. And it'll just be interesting to see that, based on how much his role grew this year, if there is, like, another level that he can get to, mm-hmm. you know, next season. Because I mean, yeah, he is still their, you know, their home run threat. And they, I mean, Plano, you know, knew this year that, you know, they got to find as many different ways to get the ball in his hands, especially as the year went on. You saw his workload increase. And I mean, yeah, he was definitely huge in bringing them back to send that game into overtime. Another thing, it's just like I mentioned this, you know, last week, you know, when we were talking about, like, I was trying to make that case for why Plano might be able to upset Trinity. It has absolutely no bearing on the actual, like, the current state of these teams, but it is insane how just these games between Plano and Trinity are always close.
Historically, yeah. They've just, yeah, they're always, like, a touchdown or a field goal separated.
This is now the fourth time that they've played in the last 10 years. Ironically enough, this was the, you know, this year is the 10-year anniversary of that state semifinal game that Plano and Trinity played in 2007, mm-hmm. a game where, you know, kind of like... again, kind of like you know, Friday, where Plano had to come back in the fourth quarter to force overtime. Trinity ultimately wound up winning that game in 2007 in double overtime, 30-27. So very kind of poetic how 10 years later there they are playing another another overtime game after Plano mounts a fourth quarter comeback. But yeah, a you know, Plano ends up going one and done. And you know, they finished their season out at 7-4, but still a you know, just a terrific game. You know, in a first round that maybe not a not exactly chock full of just back and forth, wild, crazy, entertaining games outside of, you know, Plano Trinity and Lake Dallas and Frisco Reedy, but nevertheless, hey, we still got several teams that are still kicking for the area round. We will look at that round in a few moments. We will bring in Devin Hassan and Justin Thomas to break that one down. Brian and Tim. I appreciate y'all swinging by. What games do you guys have this week, just so we can tell folks where to, where they can still follow your fine work?
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to be doing a doubleheader on Saturday at Jerry World at AT&T Stadium. 4 o'clock, Lake Dallas, their second round game. They'll be against North Forney. And then I'm going to stick around and do the 8 o'clock game, which is Lovejoy, which won their first round game against Sulphur Springs. They will take on Mighty Lone Star. So at Timothy Glaze is my Twitter. I'll be live tweeting both of those games. Be out there at good old Jerry World for about 8 hours on Saturday. So,
I'll be at Eagle Stadium in Allen, pretty much a mini AT&T Stadium. It's it's so nice out there. But I'll be there for Prosper against Poteet Friday night at 7:30. My Twitter is at Brian Murphy _. If you want to keep up with me there.
Awesome. Yeah, folks, once the stories are, once the games go final, the first spots that you can check out our stories will be online at starlocalsports.com. Brian and Tim, I appreciate y'all swinging by to help recap the some of the takeaways from the first round of the high school football playoffs. We will pick things up in a few moments with Justin Thomas and Devin Hassan as we look at some of the marquee games within our markets for round number two. Okay, and we pick things up now with a look at the second round, a few of the marquee games within our markets for the area round of the playoffs. I am being joined by Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas is our Denton County sports editor, as well as Devin Hassan, who does sports for Rowlett and Mesquite. I guess kind of picking up on that, I mean, we were as we're laying out the schedule for the potential marquee games for you know, for round two of the playoffs before things had even gone final this past week. I guess the biggest game on the docket may well be Saxey versus not the Woodlands. One of the, I mean, just a game that I think we, I don't know if we would just assume that it was like Saxey and the Woodlands were destined to rematch in the second round, just given, I mean, both teams were ranked in the state's top 10. And then, man, Rockwall just playing the spoiler of spoilers with hands down the biggest upset in the first round, a 23-7 upset, knocking out the Woodlands. I mean, this is a Woodlands team that last year, they beat Allen in the state semifinals, wound up being the state runner-up, lost to Lake Travis in the state title game. From state runner-up to bi-district playoff finalist, Texas high school football comes at you fast, man.
Well, and it's funny because Carl Padilla, you know, the godfather, as Christian would call him, Twitter, actually messaged me after that game and said, this is actually not a shot because the Woodlands has lost in the first or second round three times in the last 6 years.
Wow.
So he knew what he was talking about. But it came as a complete shock to me. I think we all thought the Saxey and the Woodlands would be knocking it.
He wasn't saying that before the game, though.
Yes, hindsight is 20/20. But it was certainly a surprise to me. I think we had all kind of, we talked about it last week, the Woodlands was going to be kind of that defining game for Saxey. But the stakes aren't any less. Just because Rockwall's there instead of the Woodlands, this is still Saxey's first chance to get to the third round of the playoffs in school history. And we talked about their expectations, about how they want to prove this is the best team in school history. Now they got to do it against Rockwall or the Woodlands.
Yeah, against an opponent that I'm sure, you know, all season long they did not anticipate seeing in the second round. I mean, you're familiar with Rockwall. They play out of 11-6A with a lot of the Mesquite ISD schools. What are, just for the folks who you know, who might have had you know, Saxey and the Woodlands circled, now having to recalibrate expectations and what to make of this game? Just what are you just some thoughts on what you've seen out of Rockwall this year?
You know, Rockwall's kind of been an up and down team. You know, they lost to Rowlett early in the season. They throttled Tyler John Tyler in the district opener. I think a lot. I think after that game, a lot of people thought they would compete for the district championship. And then they kind of hit a skid. They were sitting at 1-3 in district play, and on the outside looking at the playoff picture. But as Rockwall tends to do, and as they've done under Rodney Webb since he took over, that's the former Horn head coach took Horn to the playoffs for the first time. They peak at the right time. They won their final three district games to get into the playoffs in a tiebreaker. And then, obviously, pulled the upset of the Woodlands last week. They have an outstanding quarterback in Jacob Clark, who's thrown for 2,700 yards, 29 touchdowns this season. When I saw Jackson Smith, their sophomore wide receiver, early in the season, he was one of the most impressive players I have seen all season long on the outside. And teaming with Cameron Creighton, that's the best one-two punch that I've seen receiving-wise this season. So, you know, they have an outstanding team, outstanding coaching staff. And, again, this is what Rockwall does. They peak at the right time. Their record always is not always flashy, but they peak at the right time. That's what they're doing right now.
It's like, because you always have, like, you know, there's always a few teams every year that just happen to kind of come out of nowhere and just make some, you know, I think Mesquite Poteet was kind of like this last year, a team that just caught fire at the right time and just rode that tidal wave of momentum going, you know, maybe, you know, 3-4 rounds deeper than, you know, prognosticators might have expected. I am anxious to see just how, because you got to imagine that was a very emotional win for Rockwall, and just if they're able to now, you know, turn around and dial up that same level of intensity for another state-ranked opponent, what kind of expectations do you have for that game now?
Well, yeah, and like you say, Rockwall did. That was, I think, the Woodlands' first home loss, because obviously they had home field advantage. Yeah. First home loss since 2012. Wow. So they brought their A game. Now, can they do it again? That's obviously the big question. They have been up and down this season, but as I mentioned before, this is typically when they peak. Sachse, they got pushed. They got a little bit of a test last week against Lake Highlands. I mean, it was a game that was never really in doubt, but they never put it away either. 49-28 was the final score, but Lake Highlands hung around. They put 28 points on Sachse, and Sachse has to get a lot of points this year. You know, so I think Sachse got the first round out of the way. But again, this is the true test. What was impressive last week about Sachse was their ground game. Christian Cole, 34 carries for 300 yards, three touchdowns, also caught a 55-yard screen pass into a 55-yard touchdown pass. So that's really, for as much as has been made about Sachse's passing game with Jalen Maiden, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. It's their ground game that's really been the most consistent weapon this year, with Christian Cole, who's now rushed for more than 1,500 yards. Jalen Maiden, obviously being a dual threat, can run the ball. And that's really been their bread and butter this season. So that's, I think that's what Rockwall's key is going to be, is to take away the ground game, much like Rowlett did in that. In Sachse's one true test for the regular season, Rowlett was able to control the line of scrimmage, take the ground game away, and make Sachse make plays through the air, which eventually they did, but it was a true test. I mean, that was a 42-35 game. So I fully expect Rockwall to try the same thing. They're going to try to take out Christian Cole in the run game and make Jalen Maiden beat them through the air, which...
Yeah, I mean, that's... that's you. You're just picking your poison right there. It's I mean, yeah, it should be a very fascinating game. A game that, hey, you know what? If you're a DFW high school football fan, you don't have to drive. If they were going to play the Woodlands, that game was most likely going to be in Waco, right?
It was going to be at McLean Stadium at Baylor. Yes.
See, I mean, it'll save a lot of local folks some drive time if you want to hit up that game on Saturday. It is right out at Allen's Eagle Stadium at 1 o'clock. Correct. 1 o'clock at Eagle Stadium in Allen on Saturday.
And oh.
Yes.
I was thinking tomorrow or Friday.
And
different matinee.
Yeah, I mean, it should be whether this was the expected second round matchup for Sachse or not. I mean, it's just whether, I mean, now you get the, on one hand, you have Sachse trying to make history and post what would be then its, you know, its best season, at least from a playoff advancement standpoint, going up against a Rockwall team that, I mean, is this the kind of the lightning in the bottle team out of 6A Region 2?
Well, and that next round somewhat opened up as well, because spring was a district champion, and Austin Boo was a district champion. Well, both those teams got beat last week. Klein and Pflugerville-Hendrickson are in that other part of the sub-regional, so to speak. So not to say that those aren't going to be tremendous challenges, but it does kind of open things up for a longer run. If Sachse can get by Rockwall, they'll certainly be the favorites in the next round as well.
It kind of sticking with as we then transition to another marquee game, which is actually in the same classification, same division, same region. A game that you know, the winner of Sachse Rockwall might see, you know, in a few weeks. There's a game between Capel and in Mesquite Horn. that you know, that is also of a very keen interest. Capella Mesquite Horn, they play Friday at 1 p.m. Out at Allen, and you know, a game that you know, Justin, you're very familiar with Capella. Devin, you with Mesquite Horn. Justin, what is you know, what has kind of been your read on Capella so far and what they've shown as they've looked? You know, I mean, they've completely righted the ship since that a competitive loss to Allen in non-district.
Yeah, kind of a tough team to get a gauge on. Not the not the strongest district they competed in, especially compared to Capel. You know, they went undefeated in the district, really weren't challenged. Jesuit, you know, you thought that was going to be their biggest challenger. Yep. They just blew out Jesuit. They were winning by 30 points in the second quarter. Got a little tighter later, but so kind of tough to see with Capel. You know, kind of interested to see how they're going to stack up against a more quality opponent after not really being challenged in the district competition. You know, they only beat Richardson Pierce by 7, but they were up 14 in the fourth quarter, not really in, quote-unquote, in doubt.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see if this one becomes a tight game, how they'll react in a close game after not really being challenged much since that Allen loss you mentioned in non-district.
Yeah, and they absolutely steamrolled Rowlett in the first round, 37-6. Devin, you were at that game. What was your, I guess then as we then segue from, you know, just maybe some initial takeaways on what you saw at Capel as far as their playoff form, but you also, I mean, you cover Mesquite Horn. They took care of business against Conroe Oak Ridge. Just what did you think of your first look at Capel, and just kind of talk a bit about where Mesquite Horn's at right now?
Well, like I say, Capel, I think I used the word opportunistic last week. Again, you know, they forced the plays. I mean, Rowlett had 5 fumbles in the first half. They lost 3 of them. Capel took advantage of a short field a lot of times. They were up 34-0 at halftime, and really didn't have to show much in the second half. I mean, it was basically a foregone conclusion. Now, the defense did step up again. They forced those takeaways. They also stopped Rowlett 3 times on 4th down to prevent any kind of a serious comeback threat in the second half. You know, I was impressed with Capel, but again, they didn't have to show their entire hand.
Yeah.
We all know what Brady McBride can do at the quarterback position, but he didn't have to really do that much. I was actually more impressed with him running the ball than he was passing the ball, because wind was a factor the other night. When they were going into a stiff breeze, it affected both teams, but he was still able to make plays with his legs. I thought Ryan Hurt was an excellent bruising running back between the tackles, and a guy that we talked about, Jonathan McGill, is kind of an X-factor guy. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't ask too much of him in this game, but he flashed his potential on a fumble return. He had a couple of nice runs. He had a nice catch of the backfield. And again, like I said, the defense, Xavier Brown was just phenomenal. He was making plays all over the field. I mean, just like shot out of a cannon almost. You know, he just hit the line of scrimmage and make plays. But I expect them to have to open up a little bit more. Horn had a big question mark coming in their front 7. They were young, but they've come a long way. But the strength is still in their secondary, and that's kind of the matchup that I'm looking at. Is you have Brady McBride, and obviously he made some nice connections with Blake Jackson, KJ Liggins, who freshman,
right?
he had a tremendous catch on a touchdown. But that's the strength of Horn. BJ Williamson, Broderick Calhoun, they're both committed to Louisiana Tech. Had offers from several different places. They're lockdown corner type people. Mm-hmm. And Orrick Walker, who's a kid that really people don't talk about, except for the coaches. The coaches just swear this kid is special. He had 2 interceptions last week against Oak Ridge. Really helped kind of turn the tide of the game in what was a 24-24 game in the third quarter. And so I'm really intrigued to see how the Capel passing game goes up against the Horn secondary, kind of strength against strength.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be, just to further expand on that, you mentioned the KJ Liggins, of course, Blake Jackson, big play receiver for Capel, and Gabe Lemons. But it'll be interesting to see how they use McGill. He's been a weapon in the passing game, but throughout the season they seem to be incorporating him in the rushing game a little more this year. He's actually averaging about 9 yards a carry.
Wow.
300 yards, 9 yards a carry, 24 catches, 406 yards. So he can do it a bunch of different ways. So it'll be interesting to see how Mike DeWitt and the Cowboys look to utilize him in their attack, as he seems to be becoming more and more of a factor as of late.
Yeah, and like I said, I was impressed with the Capel defense. They were going to get somewhat of a depleted Rowlett offense. Again, this is a Rowlett offense, was playing their backup quarterback, a little bit banged up. Now they're running into one of the more explosive offenses in the area. Jermaine Gibbons is the dual-threat quarterback over at Horn, who's just been a touchdown machine this year. He's accounted for 46 touchdowns in 11 games, which obviously is a little bit more than 4 a game. Last week he threw for 4, ran for 1. He's thrown for 27 touchdowns on the season, rushed for 19. And so, you know, again, it's going to be a far more difficult test for the Coppell defense this week. And you know, Horn, I mentioned the 1-2 receiving punch of Rockwall when we were talking about the last game, but Horn has a run 1-2 receiving punch. Maurice Wren is a 6'5 kid on the outside with tremendous athletic ability. He's just a mismatch problem for any cornerback he's pretty much going to come across. And then Cornell Caldwell is a speed threat. So they're two very different receivers. They bring, you know, it's a different dynamic. So it'll be interesting to see how Coppell matches up with that group.
And yeah, obviously, Coppell Mesquite Horn should be one of the more highly anticipated second round games, at least within the Dallas area. Once again, that game is Friday at 1:00 out at Allen Eagle Stadium. Speaking of Allen, that is where I will be back on the beat for now that Plano ISD football has closed the books on their playoff run. I'm all Allen the rest of the way. I will be out at AT&T Stadium on Friday for a 4 p.m. kick between Allen and South Grand Prairie for the Eagles' second round matchup. A different opponent. I mean, I don't get to see South Grand Prairie. You know, I think this is the first time I've seen them play firsthand. But just looking at this matchup without digging too deep. I mean, the first thing that jumps out about South Grand Prairie is, I mean, they can play some defense. This is a group that only allowed 17.5 points per game. A very strong mark considering the talent in that district. It's the district that Duncanville, DeSoto, Cedar Hill, Grand Prairie, the likes that they play in. A lot was made in when Duncanville beat DeSoto 24-14. Like, wow, I mean, just holding DeSoto to 14 points. That's saying something right there. South Grand Prairie gave up only 17 points against DeSoto. I mean, it was very much a bend don't break performance. They allowed 430 yards. So I mean, but they were still able to hold DeSoto in that high powered offense to only 17 points. That is no small feat. And they did so. This was a game that they a very competitive game. A game that they lost. They only lost 17-14, and they did so without completing a pass. they went 0 of 13 passing wise, and you look at South Grand Prairie's offense. I mean, it's led by dual threat quarterback Nakia Brown. He's their leading passer and leading rusher on offense. He accounts for just over half of their total offensive yardage this season. They've got some good size up front. They got a couple linemen that eclipse the 300-pound mark. Defensively, yeah, I mean, this is a group that has a lot of speed and athleticism. They're led in the secondary by a 4-star TCU commit, Matanza Vonger, who's also used as a running back. So it will be a far different stylistic wrinkle for Allen than last week when they played a much more balanced traditional spread offense with Hebron. Justin, you were at that game. You got to see Allen Hebron firsthand. What was your initial takeaway? That was your first look at Allen this year. What was your first impression on the Eagles and what they showed against the Hawks?
Grant Tisdale's pretty good,
yeah.
And he has weapons. I was very impressed with his ability to. Obviously, he's a running ability, and he rushed for 140 yards, have a couple long runs. But he was really able to, when he was pressured, pretty easily able to slide around the pocket, maneuver around, extend the plays, and find receivers that way. And that was really a benefit for them. And they just seemed to move the ball with ease. And as it so often is with Allen, it's just kind of waiting for that onslaught, and they got it in the late second, early third quarters, mm-hmm. to 28 points in 8 minutes, 9 minutes of game time to just put that one away, and pretty impressed against a real talented Hebron team.
It's a very very Golden State Warriors-esque blueprint where you can hang around a little bit those first couple quarters, and then that run hits in the third quarter, and there's just, you're kind of blindsided by it, and it just comes in waves.
Yeah.
So Allen holding up its end of the deal, in a game that I think, at least from expectation-wise, we figured it would be a little bit closer than what it turned out to be.
I think it was a little more competitive. That, the first half was a very good half, Hebron was right in there, a couple breaks didn't go their way, and they might have had a chance to, go to the half with the lead or tied or right there with it, and then, just that onslaught. Hebron didn't help itself with major kickoff return issues. They muffed three kickoffs. One of them they lost, which after Allen scored, they muffed kickoff. That's part of that 28-0 swing that just took all the air out of them. So that game was more competitive than the score would say. I think even Allen would admit that. Hebron gave them all they could handle in the first half and easily could have been winning that game.
But yeah, one thing we had mentioned, I mean, yeah, you just have to play.
It's tough to do it for four quarters.
Yeah, from an execution standpoint, you got to be flawless. And yeah, things like little muff kickoffs, that's just, I mean, that's tough against any in any sort of a playoff setting, let alone Eagle Stadium with the with the state's number one team ready to pounce at the at any given moment. So yes, Allen still clicking along, still you know, number one team in the state, still bound for the second round, and they continue their playoff run on Friday against South Greenberg.
Ten in a row, I believe, right? Ten in a row in the second round?
In the second
round. 10 straight first-round wins, I should say, I guess, for Allen.
Yeah.
Since that Rowlett loss.
This is the Rowlett.
Yeah, yeah, that fateful that fateful day back in 2007. So, so yes, Allen's still clicking along in pursuit of state championship number five. Yeah, we've got some other, you know, notable area games on the docket. If you're a... like I said, Eagle Stadium and AT&T Stadium seem to be like seem like the places to be these you know, on Friday and Friday and Saturday. Allen's part of a triple header out at AT&T Stadium on Friday. That also includes a game that we'll be covering as well between McKinney North and Highland Park. We've also got a couple in-market games Saturday at AT&T Stadium in the mid to late afternoon between Lake Dallas and North Forney at 4 o'clock and Lovejoy and Frisco Lone Star at 8 o'clock. And yeah, it said Devin, you'll be out of down out of the Eagle Stadium quite a bit for said for Capel Mesquite Horn 1 o'clock on Friday, Saxey and Rockwall same time on Saturday back out at Allen. In between, Brian Murphy will be at Prosper versus Mesquite Poteet 7:30 p.m. Friday at Allen. And yeah, just a nice little a nice fun little slate of second round games that we have on the docket. Hey, Devin and Justin, I appreciate you guys swinging by. Once again, you know, once we will be out in full force this week covering all these games. No three-day weekend for us, but nevertheless, once the stories are finished, the first spot that you can check them out at will be online at starlocalsports.com. We will have a rapid reaction podcast featuring just up to the minute reactions from what we just saw at those games. So make sure you're checking out the website for those as well. Otherwise, folks, this has been Matt Welch with Star Local Media. Appreciate y'all checking out another edition of the Star Local Media Gridiron Podcast. We will be back. We will be back at the end of the week to recap our games on the Rapid Reaction Podcast, and then on Monday to size up the second round and look ahead to the third round. Appreciate y'all checking it out. Y'all have a great week. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
Looking to hire top talent in your community? Look no further than StarLocalJobs.com. Our platform is specifically designed to connect local employers with qualified candidates in their area. With StarLocalJobs.com, you can easily post job listings tailored to your specific needs and requirements. Our platform is user-friendly and offers a wide range of options to help you find the perfect candidate for your open position. Plus, our job matching algorithm ensures that your listing is shown to the most relevant job seekers in your area. But that's not all. StarLocalJobs.com also offers a variety of resources to help you throughout the hiring process. From candidate screening to interview tips, our team of experts is dedicated to helping you find the right fit for your company. So why wait? Join the thousands of satisfied employers who have found their ideal candidate through StarLocalJobs.com. Post your job listing today and start building your dream team.